dinner at 8.
I'm starving.
She loves the theater, but she never comes late.
I never bother with people that I hate. That's why this chick is a tramp.
Good morning show on your radio dial, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us. It is 9:05 on the clock. At your host, James J. here, and I am joined greatly, happily, proudly by David Farnborough. David, good morning.
Good morning, James. And are you going to start with the sad news that we've just heard?
Yeah, I was trying to find a way to do that without it being too solemn and everything. Yeah. Because in part, those that did not hear in the CBS news break, we lost one of the greats today. Tony Bennett passed away at the age of 96. An incredible artist, incredible American, incredible just human being. I think if you even strip away all of his entertainment, all of his talents, still an incredible human being, let alone with all the things that he had accomplished and did in his life. And when we lose somebody, anybody, you know, no matter what age they are, it's difficult. I don't know about you, David, but in the family I grew up in, they were very big about the New Orleans-style funeral. When we lose somebody, we celebrate them. You know, we'll have moments to feel sad, to miss them. But in the beginning moments of when you first learn of losing somebody, it's about celebrating their life, the accomplishments that they made. I think a lot of this comes from my mother's side of the family and being Jewish. For those that don't know, when you die as a Jew, you have to be buried before sundown. Like that's
on the Friday.
Yes, that's huge. And that oftentimes means relatives aren't able to get to town to see the wake and these things. And so you have to kind of do this in the moment. You have to almost have a whole funeral in your head almost of these people, of these that mean so much to you. And Tony Bennett meant a lot to a lot of us. He's an incredible artist.
Right. And there is a tendency when somebody dies at the age of, what was he, 94?
96.
96, yeah, wow. Yeah. When somebody dies at a grand old age like that, there's a tendency to say, well, it was expected and, oh, he had a good innings. Mm. But the reality is, if that's your mother or your grandmother, you don't feel like that at the time, and you still feel terrible. Likewise, when it's somebody prominent like Tony Bennett, who had a fantastic long career and was still performing up to a couple of years ago, despite the progression of his Alzheimer's disease.
Yeah.
When it's somebody like that, we do go to the celebration of life. We think, this is fantastic. Everything he's done, you read the obituary, and the obituary isn't all about the final illness or anything like that. The obituary is about all the person's accomplishments.
Yeah.
And in a life that long, he had a lot.
Yeah, well said. And thank you for starting our show like this, David. It's not how we wanted to start the show, but I appreciate you improving and going along with us on this. David joining us. Now, you might have heard David, of course, on Director's Cut with us the past Sunday. Really do appreciate you joining us for that. That was a really fun one. We had a great time on that episode. David, I don't want to assume, though, as much as I think everybody knows you in this area, just in case they don't, tell us just a little bit about yourself so that the audience is caught up.
Well, I am an Englishman, as you can probably tell by my voice. I have picked up a few Wisconsinisms since I've been here, but my accent is pretty much intact. I have lived here since 2008-2009, but I first visited Wisconsin in the year 2000, and I've been a frequent visitor since then. Hmm. But Wisconsin Rapids has been my home for the last 15 years.
What are some of the Wisconsinisms that you've picked up? Can you think of any off the top of your head?
Oh, gosh. Sometimes instead of saying, where is the radio station, I might say, now, where's the radio station at?
Yeah. Yes.
And I catch myself saying, I think, how did I pick that up?
Yeah, right. Yep. That's fantastic, David. Thank you for sharing that with us. And, of course, David, I believe you and I ran into each other at WRCT at Wisconsin Rapids Community Theater, I think.
I think that's right.
This is the first time I ran into you. And I've long appreciated your work in our area and, of course, the good work that you do at Coldwell Banker, so your realtors, great friends of ours over there. They join us once a month with Let's Talk Real Estate. So appreciate what you put into our community and you putting up with me for an hour and hanging out with us here. Thanks for that.
Well, it's an absolute pleasure to be here. And I'm no stranger stranger to the radio studio. I've done a little bit of that in my time.
And I have a feeling that it's not here's the catch, though, David. If you do too good of a job, we got to bring you back. So it's up to you if you want to do a good job or not, or just phone it in. That's it, then I won't bring you back. Then I won't.
Well, I'll do my best, and I'll try not to hijack the show to talk about celebrity deaths anymore.
Oh, that's too good. We are going to get into a little bit of entertainment news. And no more deaths. No more of those. I did want to touch on something that I thought was pretty cool from Samuel L. Jackson that he brought up in a recent interview. He was talking about how he had won an Oscar yet. Actually, the interviewer is asking him about, hey, you haven't won an Oscar yet. How do you feel about this? You're getting long in the tooth, late in your career. Now, first off, this interviewer doesn't know Samuel L. Jackson, apparently, because that man will work literally until I would not be shocked if when he passes, it's on a movie set. He loves to work. He got that break and just never stopped working. He has a deal with his wife. He has a month off every year, and otherwise he's working. And doing good work, too. I think Samuel L. Jackson is one of the more fine actors that I've ever seen. You talk about somebody that, I didn't know Samuel Jackson was in this movie. And you look forward to seeing him. Or you know that he's going to give a good performance because you see his name attached to the movie. But I do think that he should have won an Oscar for Pulp Fiction. Pulp Fiction is arguably his greatest performance. And that's the one that I always thought that he should have won it for. He was nominated along with Martin Landau. And Martin Landau, one of our greater actors. But Martin Landau had never won an Oscar. So they give him an Oscar as kind of a Lifetime Achievement Award, sort of. And a lot of the talk at the time was, well, Samuel Jackson will have another opportunity. He's never been nominated since.
I wonder, though, if that's because the type of film that he's in are more mainstream entertainment. They're popular movies, mm-hmm. and they're not serious, earnest movies. If he had a movie where he played somebody with a disability, or it was some serious political movie, then it may be that he'd have a greater chance.
Interesting you bring that up, because he did a movie back in 96, A Time to Kill, with Matthew McConaughey. It was based on a book. And in this interview, he says, quote, "The things they took out kept me from getting an Oscar. You just took the a lot of the good stuff out of it. There were scenes in there that were left on the cutting room floor that he thinks he wouldn't want an Oscar from that performance," which I guess we'll never know unless, they release those deleted scenes. I would like to see that. But his performance in that movie was incredible. Black Snake Moan is another one of his where you get to really see the thespian that he is, the true actor. Now, to your point, 90% of his movies are, Nick Fury and the Marvel movies, right, and those things and stuff. And so you're not going to get nominated for those kind of movies.
But there is a film where I thought he was exceptional, and that was Django Unchained, the 2012 revisionist Western. And he plays a character called Steven, and the movie is very much about race. Basically, the black guys are the good guys in this film, mm-hmm. except for Steven. And Steven is cruel and sadistic, and you can really believe it. Yeah. And this is not the same Samuel L. Jackson who gives us Nick Fury,
right,
or who's in Pulp Fiction.
I'd never seen that side of him, and I've seen everything he's done. And I get chills thinking about that performance. I think it's one of the most evil characters I've ever seen in television, in movies. I mean, Freddy Krueger, like any horror movie or anything like that, pales in comparison to that performance. I'd rather watch any horror movie than seeing his performance. That is so chilling to me, bone chilling. So there's a great, one of my favorite acting stories. Leonardo DiCaprio coincides with him in that scene, in those movies, in a couple of scenes there. And he wanted to work with Quentin Tarantino, but he hasn't played a lot of darker characters, Leonardo. And he's doing this. Now, this is a kid who, I'm not saying that he's got his feet completely on the ground or anything like that, but Leonardo DiCaprio is a pretty open-minded, open-heart person. He really believes in, doing good to others and all these things. And he's not a kid who's ever used the N-word or any of this stuff. That's not his style, but his character is. And he thinks he could do this role. Where they're filming, and he's struggling. And within like two scenes, he's like, I don't know if I can do this. I'm really sorry, you guys. He's like apologizing over himself. Like, you might have to recast this. I don't know if I can do this scene. So he goes and walks off, and Samuel Jackson comes up to him, and he had not heard any of this. And he's like, hey, kid, what's going on and stuff? And he's like, I don't know if I could do this. I don't think I can call you the N-word. I don't think I could do this, this, and this. Samuel Jackson looks at him. It's like, man, this is it's a Tuesday. This is what we do. Get out there and act.
Yeah.
Like, this is what we do. Don't worry about me. Don't worry about it. We know you're acting. We know this isn't real. Go out there and perform. He goes out there, gives a great performance. Like, I don't think we will ever know one of the greatest talents that Samuel Jackson has in bringing other actors up. One of the greatest signs to me, today is Robin Williams' birthday. Would have been. And the thing that I think gets undersold about Robin Williams the most, and there's a lot of stuff that does, but the thing the most is you never saw Robin Williams give a performance and not bring other actors up. Like, that's what he did. If you were like at a 5 as an actor, Robin could bring you up to an 8. Like, he could bring out that in you. Samuel Jackson does a very similar thing.
I'm of the opinion that there are two types of Robin Williams films. There's the type where he's the coked up clown. He's very hyperactive. He's a proto Jim Carrey. And there's the type when he's got a beard and he's thoughtful and sensitive. And you just think, well, where does he get this incredible performance from? And it is because he's a good actor. And so many, as you said earlier on, he's a Juilliard-trained actor, but so many stand-up comedians go into acting because there's a large element of theatre in doing stand-up work. People see a stand-up comedian and they think, oh, that's that person's character. But it's often not. They're often assuming a character, and it's as much a performance as a play.
Incredible point. I think of Richard Pryor right away, because I don't think a lot of people would consider Richard Pryor a great actor, of course. But when he was on stage doing like Mudbone or that kind of thing, like those were skits. Those were bits that he wrote. He was playing a character. There's a lot of great stand-up comedians. Eddie Murphy, another one, that would play characters on stage, and not surprising, was very good at playing characters in movies and TV shows and on SNL and all that. It's an interesting point. Taking a look at what's new in your theaters this weekend, it's Barbieheimer, or however they're pronouncing it. There's an interesting thing going on this weekend with the movies coming out, and there's two really big ones, if you hadn't already heard. The Barbie movie is being released, rated PG-13, starring Margot Robbie as Barbie. Ryan Gosling is playing Ken, Will Ferrell, Michael Cera, John Cena, Dua Lipa, Kate McKinnon are all in this as well. The narration is being done by Helen Mirren, which is impressive. It's interesting to me that this movie is getting all the hype and all the attention it is, because you've got a lot of people that love nostalgia and that are into it for that, and that are also interested in just, well, what is this? How are they turning the Barbie character into a movie? And I find it interesting when the thing that pulls people to a movie so much is curiosity. It's not a trailer. It's not an actor or something like that. It's so much of the early ticket sales for this movie have to do with people just being very curious about what it's about.
Yeah, there have been attempts to do things like that before. I was very surprised when I heard they were going to make a Sonic the Hedgehog movie. And I reluctantly took my son to see that. And I thought, this is going to be terrible. And then afterwards I thought, wow, what a fantastic movie that was. They really worked hard on that. And it's a thing which you sometimes see, especially when you have a big, what you might call franchise, like Barbie, where any movie is just a cash-in on that.
Yeah.
I think one of the elements that has come up in this is that a lot of the people working on the movie do have that nostalgia.
Yeah.
And they have a love for the Barbie image, and they're going to do their best to make a good movie out of it.
The other big one coming out, and I've been waiting for months for this movie, Oppenheimer. Cillian Murphy, one of the greater character actors I've seen, is a physicist, Robert Oppenheimer, in this biographical thriller written and directed by Christopher Nolan, one of our better directors. It's about the development of the atomic bomb with the Manhattan Project during World War II. Emily Blunt, Florence Pugh, Matt Damon, Robert Downey Jr., Josh Hartnett, Rami Malek. Huge cast. When I first watched the trailer, I got goosebumps after watching it. I think it's one of those Now, if you've read the book about Oppenheimer and all this, this has kind of like all been caught up, brought out now. But if you haven't read the book, you're going to be blown away by certain parts of this movie that were going on behind the scenes during arguably the most integral time in our world's history.
Well, I haven't read the book, so can you give me the cliff notes so I don't have to?
Sure. I think that anybody on the surface could imagine putting yourself in J.D. Oppenheimer's shoes and, okay, how do I save the world? I come up with a bomb that could end the world. That doesn't make any sense on paper. It doesn't make a lot of sense.
But right.
Reading the book, reading Oppenheimer's notes, reading where he was coming from, and I think having the perspective of hindsight that we have now that he did not have, we get where this was going. We get why that, whether you agree with it or not, the results speak for themselves. And I think that that's just as a hard of a pill to swallow as anything else in American history. We invent the slingshot, and we had no idea that the atomic bomb would be down the road, you know? And it speaks to a lot of that about the human initiative, the human mind, the creativity that we have, but also what we can do with that, beauty that we can do with that, and the destruction we can do with that.
And I think it's a contemporary sensibility that with great knowledge comes great responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
So what we're thinking about at the moment is all these things we've invented, and really we've invented 700 different ways to mess up the world.
Yeah.
And we're continuing to do so. We're making them even more efficient.
Most inventions have a three-stage process, kind of. And the atomic bomb is no different in some ways. You look at an axe. We discover an axe. Oh, I can chop wood with this. That's great. That really helps me. Oh, I dropped it on my foot. I can hurt myself with it, too. Oh, I can also hurt others with it. Like, we learn these things, but usually the latter two stages happen later. We're doing this with AI right now. AI can help us write commercials. It can help me with this and this and this. Oh, it can also do this, and it can also do this. Like, absolutely. These stages that we go through with this stuff.
The AI is a very interesting thing because I'm hearing a lot about it from people who don't use it, who don't really know anything about it.
Yes.
They seem to have the idea that it's robots coming in to do your job. But that's really not what it's... I mean, I suppose maybe I take a more positive view of this.
Mm-hmm.
It's really giving everyone better ways to do their jobs.
Right.
And if anyone's going to be put out of a job by it, well, maybe they shouldn't have had that job in the first place.
Yeah. That's a point that doesn't get brought up nearly enough with this. We're going to take a break. We'll come back more with David. But as we taking us to break, of course, Mr. Tony Bennett.
She goes to the opera and stays wide awake.
Yes, I do. That's why this lady is a tramp.
She likes the green grass under her shoes.
Welcome back, everybody. Morning show here at WFHR, locally grown radio. David and James here with you, taking you to the top of the hour with some fun. We're going to have a couple Danny Wright stories a little bit later and some good stories of the day as well. We're going to travel the world looking at some cool stuff that is going on around the world by some good people. But David, I got this one here, and I am going to be completely honest with you. I did do a couple of one or two topics that are across the pond just to try to, you know, tie in you being on the show with us and everything. I can't imagine how tired you are of that, though.
Well, you know what? I wouldn't be a very good immigrant if I got tired of people asking me about England.
So here, you know, we've got the Inquirer, the Post. I think the New York Post gets kind of labeled, thrown into that clumping a little bit.
It's the oldest newspaper in America.
Right. Yeah. But it still kind of gets thrown into
it's
that stuff, too. And then there's the Mirror out in the UK that has a little bit of that, too, from what I understand.
It's a tabloid.
It is. So when you have headlines from these, oftentimes it could be very tempting to bring it to the air, but you got to do your homework. You got to make sure that these are actual articles or there's actually meat on the bone of these things. And there actually is on this one. I thought it was pretty interesting, and I thought it actually has a plenty of tie-ins to us here in the States. The headline is, "I've picked a sweet name for my baby, but some think it sounds like a grumpy old man." This young couple right outside of Oxford are young parents, and this young lady went to social media to give everybody their name of their young boy, and they named him Graham.
Do you say Graham or Graham?
Graham. G-R-A-H-A-M.
Okay, so that's two syllables, Graham.
Graham.
We're not talking about Graham Parsons.
Yes. Yeah. Graham Parsons. Nice. Yes. No, that's good. That's good. Yeah, so Graham. Although they have expressed a liking for the sweet yet masculine name, others admit they associate it with a grumpy old man. And I thought that was kind of interesting. Actually, a lot of people thought of that with that name.
Well, I can understand that because a lot of names go in vogues. And when I think of my grandmother's names, my grandmothers were called, well, one was called Phyllis. And you don't hear of any babies called Phyllis now.
Yeah, yeah.
But my other grandmother was called Daisy. And when I was a boy, that was an old lady's name. But now that's come back and people love the name Daisy for a baby. And all names go in waves. So They're also very cultural, so it's not just age-specific, but it's location and culture-specific. So somebody, probably someone who's 10 years old in a school here in Rapids, could be called Caden or Braden or something like that. And what I'm told is that people pick those sorts of names because they like the way they sound. Somebody going for a name like Graham or what we might consider an older person's name is often taking something from their family. So there are different names, and it's usually to do with people's culture. In the UK, it's also to do with people's class, and it's also to do with the era that the people are born in.
So that was a big part of what I wanted to ask you about is the class part. I don't think a lot of us, I'll just speak for myself, I don't know a ton about that. I know a little bit from biographies I've read of like a Lennon or McCartney or something like that, and growing up in one section of England and London and you know, what it was like at the upper class and that. And we got classes here, obviously, too. But it's a little more defined from what I understand there.
It is, and things are changing a little, but it is almost as entrenched as the Indian caste system was. It was like you could be in your class, but don't you think about getting above your station? A lot of this changed after the First World War. A lot of people went into fight in the First World War, and it was working class people fighting alongside upper class, and when they got back after the war, there was this feeling, you know, we're as good as you. So things have changed largely over the 20th century, also with the labor movements in the early part of the 20th century.
Yeah, I imagine that had something to do with it too.
But it's very interesting how, you know, how these things affect people personally, because you might find somebody who was a trades union leader in the 1950s and then they become a member of parliament, and then 10 years later they're a lord. So on the face of it, they've transcended class.
Yeah.
But some people say he's still an electrician, you know. There's this snobby attitude you can't move about between the classes.
I can relate to that. I myself can relate to that. I've had plenty of people, especially when I was out in California. We're at this big wine tasting. We're trying to sell our show and everything. And you've got some execs and some big names, people that I've only seen their name on credits before, never actually introduced to. And the way that they would talk to certain cast members of mine, and then when they would look at me and the way they would treat me, they didn't even have to say anything. It was in their eyes. It was this kind of like, you know, you're lucky to be doing this and not handing out wine to us, you know, this kind of like understanding. And one lady even said something to me like that. Like, I get a little of that. I don't want to pretend I understand what it's like there and with that classism and that. But I think those of us that grow up in the projects or in the inner cities and those can relate to some of that out here. And I think that even people that grow up in rural communities or communities where there's not a big population feel some of that when they go off to college and get looked down on or something. It's not the same thing, but there are levels, there are relatable things there.
I think it's better here because certainly where your class system is based on money, then you can transcend it. So you can work hard, you can earn more money, and then you can move up the ladder. But is that how we judge people?
Yeah, yeah. You would like to think that the before that person even got to that final spot, you could find something to admire and you know, appreciate about them, and especially when it comes to work ethic and those. I say, what's a name that sounds old to you, David? What's one like? I think of Ulysses. Like Ulysses is an older person name. If I had a child and named them Ulysses, I would expect them to be 100 by the time we got home from the hospital. Like right. That's how old that name is.
Right. Well, of course, you're thinking of Ulysses S. Grant, but also it's from the classical epic.
There's a name like Moses. I don't think of it as an old man's name. I don't think of it as like an older person's name and stuff.
We're taught the story about Moses in the bulrushes, and he was a baby. So we think maybe that's why we think of him as a baby. I would think of Arthur.
Oh, good one. Good one.
Arthur, although there's that children's cartoon Arthur, isn't there?
Yeah,
he's a boy. He's some sort of creature. I'm not sure what, but he's...
Yeah, I'm not really sure what he is either. I know for myself, and I imagine some people out there would think of course, the great Dudley Moore. The great Dudley Moore and his Arthur character. It was bloody great. I love that character.
That was fun. That was an exercise in glorifying being... dissolute.
Mm-hmm. Didn't hold up as well when you watch some of it now.
And the fabulous Liza Minnelli.
Now, that does hold up. That her chemistry with Dudley Moore is some of the most fun that I've ever seen. It makes that movie. The second one, I don't really pay much attention to, but the first Arthur, the first one. I don't know how much of it holds up, but their work together.
Are you referring to Arthur 2 on the rocks?
Yes.
Or are you referring to the remake? That was made about 10 years ago.
No, I'm talking the original. The Arthur on the one with Dudley Moore and Liza Minnelli.
Yeah.
That's the one I'm thinking of.
Right, but they made a sequel to that.
Yes.
And with the same cast.
Yeah, and that one wasn't as good. From what I remember, at least. Yeah, yeah. I might have to see some scenes from that, though. That might not be bad. We're going to take a break, get to Melissa's news. We'll come back with a lot more fun on the morning show here at WFHR. Welcome back, everybody. Morning show here at WFHR, locally grown radio. Happy Friday, everyone. David and James here with you. We hope you're having a great start to your weekend. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. It's a great day in Wisconsin Rapids.
David, I want to get into this one with you. I think it's a pretty interesting. There's a new survey out on jobs, and one thing is for sure, Americans feel like they are underpaid. It's a common theme throughout almost every industry. 58% of people say that they were either somewhat or very underpaid. 30% say that they're appropriately paid, and 5% say that they may be somewhat overpaid. That's only about 5%, but that's still a positive, I would say. 63% of people said that they're happy with the work that they do. 16% are unhappy, and 75% say that their work has a positive impact. Only 1% of people say that their work has a very negative impact, so that's a positive too, I think, from this. When asked about occupations, the ones people feel are overpaid include politicians, pro athletes, CEOs, attorneys, a lot of the people that you would assume. The occupations people feel are underpaid include factory workers, farmers, nurses, restaurant workers, retail employees, daycare workers, and teachers. Again, a list that I think most of us would come up with. So nothing really too surprising there. But do you see that secondary list, the underpaid list? Do you see what I feel like I see in society of this underbelly building of that changing?
Well, I see a couple of things in this survey. The thing about most people feeling like they're underpaid, that's quite reasonable when we think that we've had a few years of higher than usual inflation. Mm. And inflation's got to go up, you know, inflation's got to have an impact for a little bit before you get your pay increase. Mm. And, you know, you don't go to your boss the first month that inflation's at 8%. You go to your boss when inflation's been at 8% for a year and you think, I can't make ends meet. Mm. So I think that's a good reason, because although inflation is now, I would say, at a manageable level for most of us, the effect is still there. Mm. So you still go to the Dollar Tree and it's the $1.25 tree.
Right, right.
And,
yes.
And, you know, that I used to love going into the Dollar Tree because I felt like I was a millionaire.
Same, when I was there. Yeah, yeah.
I thought I could fill up this basket and I could buy everything that would fit in the basket.
And here's $10. Right. Yeah, I got like a whole bowl of, it's not that way anymore.
But it's not like that now. So I think the first thing is inflation. The second thing is in the jobs you mentioned, I have no doubt that I'll give nurses as an example. Mm. Nurses, for the vast majority of them, you know, 99.9%, do a wonderful job. They're qualified, caring people, and we all feel better after we've come out of the hospital, you know, assuming it was a positive outcome of our treatment.
Yeah.
But I think we overvalue them sometimes, at the risk of undervaluing people in all sorts of other jobs. Mm. And those are things like the person who collects your trash every day, traditionally thought of as the lowest sort of rung on the job ladder. Mm. Well, this isn't fair, really, because without them, where would we be?
Adams County is dealing with that right now.
Right, and we had this in the town I grew up in England, where we had a strike for many weeks, and we had to take our trash in black bags to the village green, and we just had to leave it there, and it was awful. And you soon realize what a lot of people do when you don't have them. It's the same with the truck drivers during the pandemic. Mm. Suddenly, people realized how worthy they were. So, yes, teachers, nurses, the military, they all do a wonderful job, and in most cases a job that I couldn't do. But almost everyone does a really important job, and they fit into our society like cogs in a machine. And if you took one of those cogs out, the machine wouldn't function.
Such a good point. I think one of the things that stand out to me about the underpaid portion of this part is while most of us aren't CEOs and can't give raises or any of these kind of things, there is an appreciation we can give. There is a, especially during the pandemic, where you saw, you know, even in a city like New York, where they barely look at each other walking across the street or anything, you saw a huge outpouring of thank you to our nurses and our doctors that were working the front lines, and that our EMTs are those people. We see this with teachers a lot. We see it with a lot of different positions. I will say locally, I heard from a lot of people during the pandemic that appreciated our garbage and truck and recycling people, because that went out without a hitch. We went through a pandemic and nobody had their garbage piling up on them. I mean, that's impressive to me. That stuff, I think that we're trying to be better about or getting right. You know, but there's obviously that doesn't pay the bills. You know, appreciation doesn't. You can't give appreciation to the water company.
Right. Obviously. And we did a similar thing during the pandemic in the UK. I say we as someone who's lived in America for 15 years and is an American citizen. But in the UK, they did a thing where every week on Thursday, I think, I don't know, 1 o'clock or something, they would go out in the street and they would applaud the NHS, the National Health Service. So they would have a round of applause for all the doctors and nurses, and which was great, but I think a lot of them wanted more money.
I think that would go a long way. That would go a little bit farther. I don't know if we're going to see this happen, maybe even in our lifetimes, but it does feel like there is this undercurrent happening of whether it's, you know, hopefully sooner rather than later, but 10, 20 years from now, this list being very different. This list, when people are surveyed and asked who is overpaid, who is underpaid, maybe that underpaid list doesn't include some of these positions, some of these things. I'd love to see us do a little bit more appreciation to our factory workers that work so hard on those lines. Our farmers, I don't know if we could ever spend enough time appreciating our farmers in the ag industry and how vital that is.
And the reality is that you don't need as much training to be a factory worker or a bin collector as you do to be a nurse. And so your nurses are going to be paid more than your laborers. And that, I don't think, is going to change, you know, even with AI.
Right. No, you're very right about that. That's a great point. You just teed me up perfectly. I wanted to get to one other story here with you. That's so good, David. The record for most people in America in American flag tank tops will probably hit a new number over this weekend. A massive new American-themed amusement park is coming to Oklahoma just off Route 66. It's called American Heartland Theme Park and Resort, and it's going to be opening in 2026. So you got plenty of time to make plans. It'll cost $2 billion. That's with a B, everybody. Billion. And be around the same size as Disneyland. Even the layout is similar. Some of the designers used to work at Disneyland. The entrance will have a huge map of the U.S. on the ground and a big American flag sticking out the center. Then once you're inside, you'll have different, quote, lands, just like Disney Park. But the thing that is catching a lot of people's eyes about this is that this is going to be, from what I've read, a very AI-themed amusement park, where a lot of the rides, a lot of the stuff is done with AI. And that's a part of this that I don't know if we've really thought too forward with. You touched on it very well earlier. The idea of AI taking over a job, I don't worry about as much. It's more so I look at the assist it can be. Melissa brought this up, too, about an AI assisting a doctor or that sort of thing. I could see this being... You know, I'm not trying to take jobs from carnies or carnival goers or carnival people that run carnivals or anything like that. But there's a lot of those jobs that maybe they could be doing something else and they have a machine working the ride or something.
Well, I was wondering how AI would help this amusement park. Are you saying that the rides are going to be designed by AI?
No, it sounds like the rides are going to be run by AI.
They're going to be run by AI.
Yes, that's what it's sounding like. And this is still in the early stages, too. So some of this stuff, they may just be throwing out there to see what people think.
That sounds very abstract to me. And I'd be interested to see what the application is.
Yeah. I'm just curious about how that would run. Like how do how the computer knows when to let people on or how somebody's not tall enough for a ride or something like that.
Yeah, I think the sort of thing that AI is really good at is working out optimization. And one thing that they have a problem with, if you go to an amusement park, you've probably seen this, is when you let on people on the ride and when they get off. It's probably not quite so badly handled as getting people onto and off an airplane, but it's still something which wastes a lot of our time when we'd rather be having fun. Maybe the AI could manage the queuing so people don't have to be in those long lines.
Yeah, that's a great point. Wow, I didn't even think of that. That you could tell I've never really been to an amusement park. I didn't even think about that, but that's one of the biggest things I imagine.
I was thinking about this earlier on, and I really don't like that sort of amusement park. I'm really not interested in theme parks. And I did want to mention something that we have coming up on the 29th of July. And that is at one of my favorite amusement parks locally, Historic Point Bass. Historic Point Bass, which is also, it's classified as an outdoor museum.
Yes.
If you don't know it, it's in Nakusa, and they've got some buildings dating from the 1840s, some of which were actually there, built there at the time. And there's other buildings which were rescued and moved there. And they produce a year-round calendar of events for people to attend to experience living history. And what they've got coming up on the 29th of July is their whodunit. They do this every year, and it's a real-life mystery. So you can go around there and you can interview the actors. You play the detective. You can interview actors who are all dressed in costume of the era, and you can learn about the way that things were done in those days and also try and solve a mystery. So it's a lot of fun at the same time as being educational. Now, that's my sort of amusement park.
I'm with you. Yeah, I'm with you on that. And any chance to talk about our great friends over at the Historic Point Bass, we had Mike in this week talking about it, and I could talk to Mike for days. Had the author as well talking about this story that they created, and it's a really good one. They got a great one in this week, and they never have bad ones, but it's such a good one. Enjoy, experience history coming alive over at the Historic Point Bass, and support the great work that they're doing over there. You can find out more by going to historicpointbass.com, or go ahead and show up when they have the event. We'll be talking about it next week to lead into it and get you ready for the Historic Point Bass's whodunit. It's one of my favorite events they do over there.
So I'd rather go there than Disneyland.
I'm with you on that. Yeah, right on. We'll be back to wrap up the show coming up on the morning show at WFHR. Welcome back, everybody. Morning show here at WFHR. 9:53 on the clock. David and James here with you to take you to the top of the hour. Thanks so much for joining us today and all week long. We appreciate you. And David, thank you for joining us. Really do appreciate you being here.
And I really appreciate being here. Thank you.
Got then a right story to get to before we get to our good stories of the day. It's how we do things around here, David. Give ourselves a chance to laugh at some silliness and then get into some good stuff. And this one is a doozy. It comes to us from Sky News over in the UK. Singer divorces a devilishly handsome ghost of a Victorian soldier after less than a year. You know, if these two crazy couples can't work it out, who can, David? You know?
Well, we always have these stories, and we've had them for a long time.
Really?
You know, I remember, did you ever read a thing called Ripley's Believe It or Not?
Yes,
you were a child?
Loved
I used
it.
To sit there and pore over it. And
me too.
There was a man who married a tree. And and this is the sort of thing, when you're 5 years old, a man married a tree. And then when you're a bit older, you think, well, what would that involve?
Yeah. Think a little bit deeper about it. It'd have to be a willow tree for one, that's for sure. Bore Card, a songwriter and performer from Oxfordshire, has said that the spirit became increasingly possessive after the wedding and switched between being warm and intense to a little bit bothersome, a little too clingy. Man, can a ghost be too clingy? Guys, I'm actually going to put this on her a little bit, I think. Like, how much space do you need if a ghost is too clingy for you?
Well, I think there must be something in the water in Oxfordshire, because that lady who called her baby Graham was in Oxfordshire
as well. That's right. That's right.
So that must be what it is.
There's something in the water over there. Yeah, that ain't right. That I don't know about that one, but I do encourage you, if you need a good smile, that story, there's some great audio that goes along with that one. There's some good stuff out there for that. I do want to make sure that we make some time for some local stuff, and I wanted to make sure to mention tonight. Now, I don't know if you can actually go to these shows. I think they're sold out.
You're talking about our fabulous youth theater,
yes,
directed by Gretchen Powers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we have Charlie and the Chocolate Factory at Wisconsin Rapids Community Theater, and I went along to one of the rehearsals, and Gretchen does such a fantastic job. She makes it a real joy for the children to take part in, but she also works them hard and makes them appreciate their craft and what they're doing, and ends up with a fabulous show. This one has been so popular that both performances are now sold out. Mm-hmm. So, you know, maybe you could barter with someone to get a ticket, but you can't buy one. Sorry.
Yeah. Charlie and the Chocolate Factory going on today. We did want to send a shout out and break a leg. Have a great run, everybody. Enjoy yourselves. Have fun out there. You can, of course, keep up with everything at Wisconsin Rapids Community Theater. Going to wrctheater.org. They got other great stuff coming up. The auditions for Bly Spirit are August 14th and 15th at 6:30, directed by my favorite director, Linda Garsky. I love working with Linda. She just brings out the best in me every time.
And that is a terrific play. It's written by Noel Coward.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen it a few times over in the UK, and it is it's something that he wrote towards the end of the war, the Second World War.
I didn't know that.
And it was a time when people had death all around them, especially in London when we had the Blitz. And he wrote something to lift people's spirit, but it does have a little bit of dark humor in it, and there's ghosts as well, so there's implied death there too.
I don't believe that anybody does my mom and my favorite type of comedy, darker comedy, better than England, English people. Like, it's where it was born. And I think in part of what you were talking about there, the idea of that. I think that a lot of us grew up on like Monty Python and some of that stuff and everything, and you get a little of that from that, but it's more the Noel Coward, so like you mentioned there. It's a lot of it from those writings that you get some of that ability to be able to laugh at the darkness and finding ways to do that.
I think you do, and I think in that time, in 1945, you had to. Because if you didn't laugh, you would cry.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I find myself enjoying that sort of humour more and more as I get older.
Same.
I think it may be a sense of being closer to one's own mortality.
I'm with you there. Yeah. David, you we wanted to kick off our good stories with that, and we also had another local one. We had a birthday one to shout out.
Oh, yes, yes. Talking about being closer to one's mortality, I've got to wish a happy birthday to my darling wife, Jen, who is, I think she's about 30 today.
Yeah, right on. Nicely done, nicely done. Jen, happy birthday to you. We wish you a great day. Enjoy your day. Let's take a look at some world good stories as we're wrapping up here, David. A woman near Dallas was in a nasty wreck this month, and smoke was pouring out of her SUV, but four random guys pulled her out in time, and it sounds like she's okay. There's a video of it on Facebook. The guy who posted it said he heard just she had just had a broken ankle, but you look at the way the devastation that this vehicle is in, I don't know how they got her out of there, but they did, and it was for, the video looks like it's people she knew, but it was strangers. It was people that just happened to see this going on. These are the kind of stories that I need personally whenever we have these, you know, knucklehead weeks like we've had or something like that. I think we can all use reminders that there are plenty of strangers helping strangers out there.
I think it's a good reminder that people are basically good. And I know there is some negativity about that suggests otherwise, but I think the vast majority of people are good and would do their best to help someone in trouble.
A cat in the UK named Zebby just won a contest for Cat of the Year. His owner is deaf, so he helps her out. Like if someone's knocking at the door, he'll pounce, he'll pace around and come up to tap her or at everything. It's a very cool relationship that they have. And speaking of the UK, animal rescuers in England saved a squirrel the other day that was stuck 30 feet up in a tree. It couldn't get down because it had a toilet paper tube stuck on its head, and they helped him out and got him out of there. It was a pretty cool little moment. David, it's been a cool moment, a cool hour hanging out with you. I apologize. You did too good of a job. You are going to have to come back. That is part of your contract. I'm sorry.
Well, I'd love to, and thank you very much.
Looking forward to hanging out with you again, David.
Do I get paid now?
We'll talk about that off air.
Okay.
We will be back with more great stuff for you next week, everybody. Our final good story of the day is you out there. We greatly appreciate you. Thank you so much for helping us keep local radio alive around here. Stream us 24/7 and stick around for some great other content coming up from Civic Media and us right here at 97.5 FM, 1320 AM WFHR. We are locally grown radio.